to acknowledge my sponsors and myself, and now you look at the previous talks and you find what you forgot. And also, I instead of advertising my new students, which are too far from graduation, this is actually joint work with my students that graduated a couple of years ago, just last year. I just want to this talk will talk about innovation and other things that were sort of a little bit bashed this morning, like as if we should be conservative in changing because there are a lot of things that if you change them, they become problematic. So this is a very non-conservative talk in this sense. A lot of the research that has been done on sensor networks for the last 50 years has been driven by the idea that you can separate the operations of processing and compression and then overlay a network on top. And I think a lot of the things that are coming out right now, a lot of the new solutions that are coming out right now, come from the recognition that it's actually hard really to separate that. And I think Michelle Efros pointed out correctly, perhaps not rate is not the thing that the network is going to give you. They're going to give you some more fancy description of how a communication is handled. But the advantage of the distributed solutions of the classical multi-terminal source coding problem, distributed action problems, which are far too from being completely solved, is that you can sort of mix and match any kind of network architecture. They will work with this simple star architecture, but they also work if you have a multi-hop network. And if you have near neighbors communication, you may just simply avoid to use them. Instead, if you start thinking of sequential processing or parallel and decentralized processing, you actually seem to ask much more to the communication network. The thing is that actually, if you look at a wireless network, the wireless network looks a lot like this. You have already a lot of feedback happening. And so the question is, you might as well use it. The problem with that is that you had a difficult problem before with your distributed solution, and the problem doesn't get any simpler. Optimizing this cooperative interaction, saying even what kind of rate you should provide to a terminal, is actually an optimization problem in itself. Okay. But it's worthwhile dealing with it because perhaps we are wrong at being interested in this flat network with dense with a lot of nodes, and I'm perhaps the only one that now cited this paper, so I feel now I'm out of date. I'm still citing the famous Gupta and Kumar paper about the scalability problem. And we know that overlaying a network without consideration about the traffic is problematic. And we also know that these type of problems arise because we sort of fixed the strategy. We said that two packets will collide, but the physical layer constraints are actually different. We know that, of course, we cannot blast infinite power from these terminals, but we have other features, so the medium is broadcast and linear, and we have another constraint that many times we tend to forget, is that if we transmit, we cannot listen, and that poses a non-trivial scheduling problem, especially when we do parallel processing. So these are the constraints that network information theory has, and network information theory has come up with bounds, but not with a full solution. But again, if we don't want to necessarily to overlay a network, we may consider these constraints in abstract and come up with something that we can do which is different from the collision model and see some improvement. So these are not the general opportunities or the general challenges. This is my point of view. Well, I am focusing on why I'm interested in the sensor network area. I think that for a communication engineer, as I classify myself, when you see the sensor network, you immediately see all these multitude of radios, and you are I have an incredible temptation of using them together and orchestrate them to transmit nice signals that will convey the maximum amount of information about the environment. And the environment is not necessarily translates to each single sensor measurement. In some state, the sensor measurements are affected by that. And you would like somehow to use efficiently this wireless medium and all these distributed resources to convey this information. Now, the communication problem, unfortunately, the interesting communication problem, unfortunately, does not lie only in this place, but actually lies sort of at this interface, the interface between these two things. And it's extremely challenging because you have a combinatorial problem, it's to find bounds and optimal designs. But perhaps thinking about cooperative transmission as a tool that you can use and coming up with strategies is not that hard, and I will show you that there are some things that you can do. And the other important thing is that if you look at this black box, actually that's a great tool that is available to us, that we can reduce the traffic in this network. This network doesn't offer us an arbitrary amount of traffic. We can actually, by design, decide how much traffic we are going to handle and trade off with the precision that we can get. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to talk about is cooperative transmission. Now, this is the easy part to me. Cooperative transmission is not that difficult, so it is not that hard to go beyond the collision model. And because we studied a lot, multi-input, multi-output system, we have theory, we have designs, we have receivers, we have a lot of theory that says that if you have at a certain set of radios a common message, you really shouldn't solve a switching problem among these radios. You should actually let them utilize codes that can be mixed up by the medium, which is a linear medium, as we said. And if these codes are properly chosen, you can actually get the same gains that you will get if you had these many antennas at the receiver side, okay? So you have it, why not using it? Now, what is the problem with this approach? That you still have somehow to tell these guys that they have a common message and they have to encode it this way. So you still have a multiple access problem, even though they are not colliding if they transmit simultaneously. And the other thing is that, who is this common message? I mean, the sensors have redundant information, but they don't have identical messages to begin with. So how are you going to make this cooperation somehow emerge from the way you represent the data? And this is the sensor scheduling problem, which is the core subject of this talk. So, but before that, I want to spend a few slides on cooperation. Cooperation is perceived as being more difficult than switching because you think I have to assign these codes, this is going to be more complicated. But actually that's not true. And the first time I thought about cooperation, I thought, well, why don't we just let these radios rescatter the same signal, right? It's just like a multiple channel that provides diversity. We have plenty of designs for this. We have fantastic receivers to harvest diversity. The network is like a filter, it's giving us a different signature. And then these messages can be decoded at the receiver with all the tools that we have. Turns out that this idea of harvesting delay diversity can be easily generalized, and we can have the random access version of cooperation very easily. All you have to do is to choose the code of your choice. If you insist on delay diversity, this would be shifted replica of the same message, but you can choose more efficient codes. And all you have to do is every node has to just transmit a linear combination of those with random coefficients. And what you see is the effect of having an equivalent channel, which is the random linear combination of these channels, so you can fix the codes a priori. And this code doesn't have necessarily to be matched to the number of antennas that you actually have. So you don't need to know how many are cooperating with you. You just decide a priori. The decoder, on the other hand, doesn't need to know that either, because the decoder needs to just estimate this channel and decode its own code. So cooperation is fairly easy, and if you choose this wisely, you can actually have the same diversity that you will get from this code. So you will certainly have a diversity which is upper bounded by either the number of antenna, if that's the maximum, or the order of the code. In this case, we have four antennas, and the code is for two antennas. So if the code is for two antennas, you cannot have more diversity than two. But if this was, for example, for designed for six antennas, then I could harvest diversity. Four, and the only requirement is that you have to choose this random code so that this expectation is bounded, and you are done. So randomized cooperation, it's easy. And once you know how to do it for one level, then why not repeating it? Suppose that this is a source. The source sends a message. These nodes here with insufficient SNR to decode, then they can recruit another group, and so on and so forth. So gossiping, spreading information across the network is actually relatively easy. You don't need to know how many are recruited to cooperate. The scheduling is simple. The receiver, that's all right. Well, of course, you need some synchronization. You will have some synchronization problem. But within certain limits, you can deal with it as a dispersive medium and design a receiver for it. So the question is that if you accept that, you know, now broadcasting is not that difficult anymore, right? So what is best to do? Should I choose a code that can harvest as much diversity as I need when I recruit the biggest group? Or should I choose a code that harvests a little bit of diversity? Now, it depends on the objective, but if you really want to broadcast, the result is not totally intuitive. So we did an asymptotic analysis of this protocol that I just described, assuming that each node in this network becomes a point which transmits infinitesimal power, okay? And so you recruit a point in space. And asymptotically, what happens is that if you choose just to let the signals overlap, so you have diversity equal one, the probability that you will be retransmitting in a certain group far from the center of the network, which is the zero, becomes higher at further distance compared to the case where you use the maximum diversity. So what are these curves? This is the probability that at a certain distance are from the source. With a diversity that depends on the color of this curve, you are going to participate to the first, second, third level of this message that is broadcasted. And what happens if that, if as the number of nodes goes to infinity in the asymptote, you use an amount of diversity in the order of the number of users, so L goes to infinity, well, you remove the fading, essentially. There is no longer fading. You have so much diversity that your channel is absolutely reliable. And the probability that you, at a certain distance, will cooperate and will receive the signal that has been retransmitted from the source becomes one. But as you can see in that case, these regions shrink in size. And what happens is interesting, that in some cases, if the power is not sufficient, the nodes will no longer transmit on the next. So what happens if I decrease, if I use a finite diversity, L equal 10 or L equal 2 or L equal 1? The interesting thing is that the least diversity I use, so the more I keep the channel valuable, on average, the faster it gets further away. Of course, this is the optimistic point of view. The pessimistic point of view is that I have tails. So I can wait, some of the nodes will wait quite a bit to receive it. So why do I get a behavior like this? Well, because I'm not trying to aim it at one node. I have an enormous amount of nodes that can receive and rebroadcast. Occasionally, some of these nodes are going to get lucky and get beamforming gains. And as a result, these faraway nodes will trigger other nodes to cooperate, and this will proceed much faster. Yes, and I'm using this randomized space-time code. So I fix the diversity a priori. And if I use L equal 1, that means I just simply let the signals overlap. No boundaries expansion whatsoever. Okay, so this is to say, cooperation to me is actually very simple. I think it's simple, and I think the simpler you keep it, the stupidest code you use, the best it is. Because again, we are not trying to aim it at one point. You are trying to reach, to recruit as many nodes as you can, spatially. So there is an opportunistic effect that comes for free, and the answer to the question is how much diversity do I need? I need a small diversity if my objective is, again, to broadcast rapidly information. Now, this analysis that I just made doesn't clarify how I let cooperation emerge. Because I still am analyzing the case. I have a single source who is recruiting all these groups and spreading this information around. How do I let a group of nodes have the same message if they originally don't have it? They just measure sensor data. So what is the main objective of data-driven access? Well, this a lot of people have different definitions for this. For me, is that if not have data that can recognizably attribute to a certain class. They can say my data are compatible with this particular type or class. Then they can schedule the transmission over exactly the same channel. So data that have the same, sensors that have the same data attributes should use the same channel. And how would I, the question is, how would I, with a policy like this, find out what is the sensor field? Okay? Now, obviously, this violates the collision model because the expectation is that multiple data, multiple sensors will have, we want to use the same channel, and I cannot identify them because they are using the channel based on their data, not their identity. But there is an interesting other thing that happens is that if somehow the important thing is the presence or the absence of the particular datum in the network, I deal beautifully with the half duplex constraint. Because when I transmit, I use that channel, I cannot hear if anybody else is transmitting over the channel. But if what matters to me is the presence or absence or that datum to move on in my algorithm, then I don't need, because I know if the datum is present because I use that channel. Okay? So that is an interesting feature that I get for free. So this is one way, again, I think this type of approach could be completely data-driven. So how would they structure the approach? The fusion-centered problem, not a good time, Ranjit. I swear I was disconnected before, so I didn't. Okay, so the idea is a group in the network is asked a certain query. Are you in such and such state, in state C? So the idea is that now only this group, just by virtue of the query, is allowed to cooperatively send me some feedback, okay, some signal that has something to do with this query. And of course, this signal is received at nodes that not necessarily belong to this group. They are nodes in the network. And if I couldn't hear the answer or I want the answer everywhere in the network, I can apply exactly the same trick I described in the first part of my talk and just spread it around with cooperative transmission. So this first group will recruit another group, they will recruit another group until everybody will get it. So what is the advantage? If I have a good set of queries that clarifies to me the sensor field, and if the data structure is such that I can guess it with a low number of queries, then the number of times lost that I need is really some function of the complexity of the data, not on how many sensors I have. So the objective of a strategy like this is minimizing energy and number of queries. So per query, the signal that I transmit should be selected so that, for example, the most likely answer requires the least energy. And in terms of number, I want to get to the answer in the shortest way, okay? So now I formulate this beautiful problem, seems very interesting, but actually it's quite difficult. Why is quite difficult? Because now I have two things to decide. First, you have to decide the queries that you're gonna ask. It can be, depending on whether you have discrete or analog data, it will be more or less difficult to partition the data in such a way that you can set up these queries. The other thing is that you can send an arbitrary signal. Okay, so there is another optimization problem to solve. So it's easier just to get a sense of what you can do, and it's also easier in terms of not getting yourself in these very difficult optimization problems that, again, Michelle was mentioning before. Just to say, well, okay, let's say that I do the stupidest thing on earth, which I just let these guys say yes or no. Okay? So transmit or not transmit. Okay? So the first model would be this. Essentially, I use the fact that the channel is linear to give me sort of a logical OR of the answers of the sensors that are queried. Another model, which is slightly more sophisticated, is that I have signal yes or no, they can answer two questions, and I have an erasure if they don't agree. So sometimes nodes agree or disagree, and I can detect this in this three ways. And obviously I have a good guess in these two cases. If I have an erasure, I will need another query because I have not clarified what is that all the group of nodes agree upon. But what do I come up with? Well, I come up with a channel code, which is also a source code. And I'm sorry, this is joint source and channel coding. So the series of queries that I impose will give me a channel code. And this is fairly simple, though. I'm not requiring to redesign the internet. I'm just requiring to say yes or no, right? So even your keychain can do it. Okay, so then what is the bound? Well, I have an obvious bound, right? Because the series of queries cannot be, if this is a discrete set of data, cannot be smaller than the entropy, right? Because if I had all these data centrally and I was asking binary queries, right, this would be my bound. But what I want is to get a tighter upper bound than this one. That this one is the obvious bound where I allocate a channel per sensor and I ask each sensor to give me its own data. So the first challenge is to find a good querying strategy, okay, and a general bound. Now, whenever I a lot of people that when they see this, they say, well, it has to be this, it has to be tight, because the entropy is, after all, Huffman coding, one interpretation, it's a guessing game, right? So you organize, you structure the Huffman tree as queries that have the shortest path leads you to the easiest queries. And actually, that's not totally true, because there is a decentralized constraint that each node cannot answer a query that depends on other nodes' data. So where did we get our intuition about how to set up a good querying strategy? There is actually four specific type of data, which are Bernoulli data, 1-0, with inherently small probability of having 1 or 0, one of the two states. There is a number of papers that came after Dorfman in 43 realized that a way of sampling blood tests that was much more efficient was actually to put together blood samples and collect, also in that case, the logic OR answer of the test. And in that case, the problem, as I said, was that of detecting that, in that case, actually, some soldiers had syphilis, was actually the motivation of this. And since the disease was fairly rare, he realized that if he was pulling these samples together, it was easier to get to the answer than analyzing each sample individually. And this is, the strategy group testing is a big field in genomics. It's used in a lot of different fields. And it has also appeared again in the context of network theory because it has offered an interpretation for random access. In particular, the study of Kapetanagis and Berger and Wolf showed that you can interpret ALO as a probabilistic version of a group testing algorithm, essentially. So you can optimize the strategy for this type of field, but you can also generalize the idea of query. Why should you ask only if you are sick or not? You can ask all kind of articulated query. And there are other papers that we sort of took as inspiration to find these good strategies. And I also want to mention actually some work by Akbar simultaneously with the Blanton group, because this idea of using the channel, the scheduling of the channel as a function of the datum that you have is exactly sort of the same idea of the type-based multiple access, except in this case it's sort of a feedback. So it's a query that that stimulates that operation, while in this previous work, it's also concurrent actually, in this work the idea is exactly, you have a certain data of a certain type and use this channel without any assignment that has to do with the node. It's purely the data that you have. So to find a good strategy, we said, well, what is the next evolution? After you study the Bernoulli case, you should study Markov chain, a binary Markov chain. And in this case, we obtained fairly easily an upper bound for a tighter upper bound than the entropy for the number of queries that you need to resolve the field. This is an upper bound because this, this methodology is non-optimal. So let me clarify a little bit better the setup. The setup is that the sensor field is a binary field, and they measure bits, ones or zeros, that are, depending on their proximity, they are related with this Markov chain. So there is a certain transition probability. There is a certain probability that the nearby sensor has zero, given that the previous sensor has one. And of course, these are parameterized by two parameters, which are the transition probabilities or the probability of having one, and the correlation coefficient. And the greater is the correlation, the more you will have longer runs of ones and zeros. Now, if you obviously could communicate among sensors, which is not a thing that we are directly allowing, you could sort of try to make the difference and make the transition. But scheduling the thing actually wouldn't be totally trivial to do, to schedule all the sensors to exchange and find the difference. So you can use this model that we clarified before, in particular, the model with the erasure feedback, and find out that this is the number of queries that you need. Now, if you see here, this is the size of the network, so n log n is not a good number, but there is something here to notice, that this part depends on the parameters, the statistical parameters of the network. And this strategy is simply asking everybody if they are all the same, and then splitting these groups in two, so it's not doing anything sophisticated, it's not optimal. And still, even in this simple strategy, you get an upper bound that goes down as the correlation increases. If you're willing to spend a little energy in optimizing this, with the optimum absolute strategy, we don't have. But if we put a reasonable constraint that the groups that we select have always contiguous sensors, then what we have is that the optimal strategy can be found iteratively, but not in closed form. So I just can tell you numerically what happens. The solid line is what you get with this strategy, and the dashed line is the entropy bound. So you get pretty close to So why is this relevant? Why is the Markov field relevant? Well, even for continuum sources, you can imagine that this could be a simple way of reconstructing the level crossing of the continuum field. So in that case, instead of using the Nyquist theorem and having to know exactly how you have to sample the sensor field and how to critically deploy the nodes, you can put a lot of nodes and find this one and zero pattern with the querying strategies that we proposed and reconstruct that. And you can find out that, after all, the amount, the demands that you put in terms of, you know, how many queries you need per precision, assuming that you have as many nodes as you want, but you are not going to check beyond a certain precision. If tau is the distance in space between the nodes, to have the same order of precision, you need essentially the same number of queries as the number of bits that you will need per sample. Or you can imagine a multi-level crossing where you ask different queries. Depends, so you have each node quantize its own data, and you ask them, are you here, are you there? And you ask them jointly in what range they are. And in this case, it's actually convenient to use overlapping queries because you cover better the statistics. It's a Gaussian field, so just representing the level curve. And this is the case of a Gaussian sensor field. This is the rate distortion, and this is the number of queries that are required with our strategy versus the number of nodes. So as you can see, this scales. And all you're saying is that these nodes have to just transmit a pulse and spread out cooperatively or not transmit it. So it seems fairly easy. So I think I cannot go to the consensus part. So I will close it here with this fusion center problem. I think there is, it's an interesting thing that without thinking too much, we got some results. But there are important problems to solve. What happens? How would you optimally transmit a query? And if you have a fixed big feedback, how do you deal with the presence of noise or errors? Because it's a sequential procedure, so you should somehow allocate queries that cross-verify the results. And then the big question is that how would you, instead of using this yes and no strategy, is there anything else that you can use? Is there any channel coding trick that would make this system better? And this is even a worse question to ask, is are there any tight bounds? Because even for these simple problems, we had to numerically optimize them. So I don't know how realistic is that we are going to find a tight bound, but it is possible to optimize certain cases. So I'm afraid I can't go through this. So in general, you know, there was a part of my talk that was dealing with near neighbors communication. I think that's another interesting place where these strategies could be used. But essentially, to me, the important thing of being data driven is that certainly the sensors have their own data. They know little about anything else, but they can extract the schedule from their data. And that's a convenient thing. And also, there is an implicit advantage, especially when you're trying to have the nodes agree on certain values, is that if I can't hear anybody, then we all agree, right? We all have exactly the same data, we have to do nothing else. And it actually does make cooperation emerge naturally, because if everybody agrees, everybody cooperates, and at least the fusion center is not involved, you hear a strong message when some type of states are highly present. It's scalable because the number of queries you need scale with the data. So if your data are scalable, then you're going to scale. Otherwise, you obviously are not going to scale. And the scalability is irrespective of how many nodes you tossed down. It's just really a problem how complex is the data field that you are trying to extract. And this concludes the essential my talk. It's a complex optimization problem, with some interesting